Mr. Davy, reel 5.
You were attached to Queen Elizabeth from February 1918 to April 1922. Was it usual for Marines to be attached to one ship for such a long period?
No. During the war, there would be no commissions. You would go to a ship, and many Marines stayed in one ship right through the war. On the other hand, other Marines probably had half a dozen different ships according to circumstances. For instance, some would go to hospital like I did and go back to their own ship. Others would not go back to their own ship, but having something else happened in the meantime, they'd go to another ship. But I think it was quite common for people to have long years in one ship. But I remember on one occasion, I went back because I liked it there. And because when I disembarked, I made it known that I was quite happy where I was and please could I go back. And I did.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that on one occasion. I remember I had a letter when I was in hospital from a Colonel Cantrell who was...
Before we go on to service on Elizabeth, which do you personally prefer? Life aboard ship or life in barracks?
Bobby Barracks.
Why?
I can't particularly tell you any reason. If on board ship you are completely in everything that's going on all the time and you can have no private life at all because there's always something in which you have to play a part and you're living in a mess deck with hundreds of other people. You have no privacy. I think probably that's as much... I quite enjoyed ship life, mind you, but of the two, I would prefer shore.
Yeah, you said it so quickly when I asked you the question.
Yes.
No doubt at all.
Ship oh, yeah, no life. Doubt. No doubt, whatever.
Barrack life, yeah. Sailors, on the whole, tended to prefer life aboard ship and dislike life in barracks.
Yes.
It's an interesting difference.
Well, I would say so, yes, because as far as a sailor would be concerned, and I suppose as far as a Marine would be concerned as well, life in barracks is more military. It heads around with more discipline.
And was that true for Marines? More discipline in the barracks?
Probably, yes. But it was never a thing that appealed to me as objectionable in any way.
What kind of things... on the discipline side, would you get in barracks that you wouldn't get aboard ship?
Well, you would get parade work, drills on parade, and revision courses in every subject under the sun, practically. But I personally liked them. I suppose it's a matter of fancy waistcoats. Some people did and some people didn't, yeah. But as far as I was concerned, I liked them. Don't quite know where
I
we got to.
I was very interested last time when we talked about the story of your actually joining Queen Elizabeth. Could you run through that again? You left Euston by train.
And yes. During the First World War, there was a naval train left Euston every day. I think about 4 o'clock it sailed out of Euston on its way north. And this train was staffed with a naval staff consisting of a master at arms and various people like that who took over the train, and it journeyed north and ended up at Urzo, which was the port for Scapa, stopping en route at anywhere where there happened to be a naval ship, such as Rosyth, Invergordon, and places like that. And it was all the draft for the fleet assembled from Chatham, Portsmouth, Plymouth, or wherever they went from, at Euston, and went aboard this train. And from the time you were aboard this train, you were under naval discipline, and you checked yourself on board the train. Thereafter, they knew you were there, and thereafter, the proper rolls and cheese would appear at the proper times, and so on. And I don't know how long we were on the train. I should think a couple of days. I personally was drafted. We didn't know what ship we were going to until the naval train pulled out of Euston. And when we had pulled out of Euston, and so presumably our contact with the outside world had ended, the master at arms then came along and told us what ships we were going to. I was told I was going to the Queen Elizabeth, and everybody in my compartment looked at me with awe and bated breath, because the Queen Elizabeth at that time was considered the greatest battleship in the world. And we arrived at Purzo fairly early in the morning, I think, about 2 days later.
That was Purzo, wasn't it?
Purzo, the very north tip of Scotland. Mm-hmm. Where we were offloaded and taken aboard a drifter. A drifter being the fishing smack style of thing, which was used as a general runabout. And taken from there to the Imperouse. The Imperouse being the depot ship for Scapa. Which received not only people but mail and everything else. In fact, any commodity of any kind that was destined for a ship went to the Imperouse, and from there it became distributed to the fleet. And if the fleet, if any particular unit of the fleet wasn't in Scapa at the time, then it was held for them, and the ships were told by signal to come and collect what the Imperouse had for them, whether it was mail or whether it was bodies or whatever it was. It all went through the Imperouse. I know the general impression I've got of my journey from Purzo to the Queen Elizabeth was hazy bouts of seasickness when I didn't care whether I lived or died. And at the time I was wearing full equipment, and I had a kit bag and a rifle and untold impedimenta of all kinds, which I didn't care whether I lost or whether I didn't. And eventually, from the Imperouse, I was collected by another drifter, the Queen Elizabeth's drifter, and taken to the QE. And I thought, when I saw the QE, at last there's something stable there that won't move about underneath me. Because I was... This was so. While she was in harbour, of course, she was so big and heavy that she didn't move. But to get aboard there, it was so rough that the drifter came alongside of the Queen Elizabeth, and a ladder was put up to the side, an ordinary builder's ladder. Looked a flimsy thing to me, but I was the bloke who was going to go up it, so of course it would look flimsy. And eventually, I suppose, The sailor at the top of the ladder must have seen that I was a bit green on the job, and he put a rope down which was tied round me, and they hoisted my kit bag up and my rifle and eventually me. Mm-hmm. I went up the ladder with the assistance of the rope. And I know the Marine Sergeant Major aboard took one look at me when I got there, and I suppose he saw I was in the last stages, because he said, all right, go down below, I'll see you later.
Mm-hmm. Well, once you had gone aboard and had sort of settled in a bit, this being your first ship, was there anything about shipboard life that surprised you or caused you any problems?
I don't think so. We'd been well inoculated with what to expect on ships. And as far as it is possible, the QE for those days was a modern ship, and many of the old difficulties had been ironed out. For instance, she was an oil-burning ship, so half the fleet, in fact more than half the fleet, was still coal-burning. Well, there again was a hell of a thing straight away, coaling ship. And being fleet flagship, I suppose she had more than a fair share of amenities, such as they were.
What were they?
Well, there would be concert parties. I don't know what they were called in those days, but what we would now think of as ENSA would come around from time to time, and ship's concerts would be organised, and there was a cinema service in the fleet that showed films round ships.
Kind of films?
Just the ordinary commercial films of the period, you know, the ordinary drama. And I remember Pearl White was always in trouble. She was the one that she was the heroine at the time, you know. She was involved in terrific adventures, and the serial went on forever and ever. It was there before I joined, and it was still going on in about 1920, yes.
Any other amenities apart from the concert parties and cinema?
You made your own very largely.
What kind of things were popular?
Card playing on board would be as popular as anything, because it was something you could do with very little equipment.
Any gambling?
No. Don't think so.
When I asked you if you had any little things aboard ship that caused you problems, I was thinking of things like slinging your hammock, which you presumably would have done for the first time.
Yes, but this hammock slinging was one of the things that was taught during the recruit period, which, among all the miscellaneous things that I've told you about that went through recruit training, swimming and so on, with knotting and splicing and hammock slinging and how not to do it and how to do it, all that kind of thing.
I see.
So that really, by the time you got afloat, there was very little that you ran into that you hadn't heard of already in some form or other in your recruit's days.
How was the Marine unit aboard the QE organised for its routine duties?
Well, it participated in all the organisations of the ship's company as regards the general working of the ship. It took its share of gunnery, and it was also divided into watches. For instance, the whole ship's company, not only the Marines, whole ship's company would be divided into, or was divided into, port and starboard watch, and first part of the watch, second part of the watch, and so on. who took turns for duty, and the watch, when it was on duty, consisted of a section of spokeswomen, a section of topmen, a section of quarterdeckmen, and a section of marines, who conformed to the requirement to the watch, whatever it might be. And all the work of the ship would be done by the watches in turn, and the marines would have their part in all jobs. For instance, there would be, if boats had to be hoisted in and out by a derrick, there would be various guys on the derrick, four guy, port four, and so on, and the marines had their guy.